Let's start this evening reading Luke chapter 24, beginning at verse 4. And it happened, as they were greatly perplexed about this, that behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. Then, as they were afraid and bowed their faces to the earth, they said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He's not here, but is risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, 'The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, and be crucified, and the third day rise again?' And they remembered his words. Then they returned from the tomb and told all these things to the 11 and to the rest. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles." In verse 11, "And their words seemed to them like idle tales, and they did not believe them." This evening, I want to start a series about believing. John chapter 20 and verse 31 says, "These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." And I want to do several lessons on this theme, and I am using some material from three books called Rock Solid Faith. And there's one on how to build it, how to sustain it, how to defend it. So these are going to be a very brief summary. They are very detailed, but so many times we try to tell people you need to be baptized, and they need to be baptized, but we got to start way back over here, because a lot of people don't even believe in God, or they have some false idea of God. So this evening we are going to start, and we are going to look at some reasons or excuses people do not believe in God. The first reason I would suggest is that there is a bias against God. What does that mean? There is a prejudice against God. One of the most famous people to illustrate this is Charles Darwin. In 1850, Charles and Emma Darwin's oldest daughter, Annie, fell ill. On April 23rd, 1851, she died at the age of 10, and Darwin was devastated. And although Emma was a devout believer in God and Christianity, with Annie's death, her husband couldn't accept that. He couldn't tolerate those concepts. And this was the end of the road for Charles, the crucifixion of his hopes. He could not believe the way Emma believed, nor what she had believed. There is no straw to hold on to. He lost his daughter. There is no promised resurrection. To him, the Christian faith was empty. And for him, death marked an impasse and a new beginning. It put an end to 3 years' deliberation about the Christian meaning of mortality, and it opened up to him a view of the tragic consequences of nature. So Annie's death destroyed, he let it destroy, his belief in a moral, just universe. Charles Darwin then took the stand as an unbeliever, and we know how his unbelief in God has influenced thousands and probably millions of people since he started writing about it. Another reason that people do not believe, again, it's an excuse, is because of their parents and upbringing. Now, I'm going to use an illustration from Peter about husbands and wives, but it applies to children also. So Peter talked about the influence of wives and husbands. Again, we can make the connection with parents and children. Peter spoke of the potential effect a godly woman could have on her unbelieving husband when he wrote, "In like manner, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that even if any obey not the word, they may without a word be gained by the behavior of their wives, beholding their chaste behavior coupled with fear." So Peter is saying, women, the way you live, even without saying a word to your husbands, can show them that you are a godly woman, that you are putting God first. And that's a sobering thought, that one person, a godly wife with consistent behavior, a reverent fear for God, could set such an example that she would change another person's life. And we've seen that. And I imagine many of us know of an example of that, where a wife has led her husband to the truth. Again, the influence. How many people do you know, friends that are Christians because their parents were Christians? There are many, we can think of many, because of the influence of their parents. That's a positive example. You look at it negatively. Parents that do not believe in God, or they badmouth God, or they badmouth with God, the church. We'll see some of that in these other excuses. And then the children with these minds, again, that are like jello, and whatever's put in there, it's going to set up and harden. They accept the good, or they accept the bad. They accept God, or they accept there is no God. So parents and upbringing is another excuse that people believe or use for not believing in God. Education is a big reason. And it was interesting, as I was looking for slides to go along with this, I knew this, but just seeing some of these things graphically was really eye-opening again. And we think that we have one of the best educational systems in the world. I would say a lot of people would say that. We all know people that are teachers, good people, good teachers, care about the children. Generally speaking, the educational system in America is the end product of John Dewey's progressive education movement. The progressive education movement profoundly changed education, not only in America, but in other countries also. Who was Dewey? He was a socialist. He was a materialist pantheist. A pantheist believes in worshiping all the gods there is out there. They believe in worshiping the world, all the gods. They do not believe in one God. He was one of the founders and the first president of the American Humanist Association, formed in 1933. And as a result of Dewey's efforts through educational establishment, the kind of education that is being offered in schools today has the potential to destroy faith in God, while again encouraging and promoting unbelief. One of the most important tools employed by Dewey and his intellectual offspring to cripple belief was and is organic evolution. So you have Charles Darwin, who had a bias against God, a prejudice against God, because his daughter died. Then you have John Dewey, this progressive socialist materialistic pantheist, basically spearheading our education system. And one side note at the bottom of this, as Samuel Blumenfeld stated in his book, NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education. There are all kinds of organizations that are brought in to teach against God. And it is interesting, too, the whole reason that the school system was started in the United States was to teach children to read the Bible. That's why our education system started in this country, to teach children to read the Bible. Now you have a problem if you bring a Bible to school. So John Dewey, American philosopher, psychologist, educational reformer. Education, it says, I believe that education is the fundamental method of social progress and reform. So basically, education has evolved into indoctrination of propaganda. He and many others want to fundamentally change the social progress and reform And we're going to do that through the school system. Now, you stop and think, in all of our lifetimes here, with the exception of a couple, again, when we were in school, we couldn't have imagined what it would be like today. Here's a cartoon. This is from 2003. It says, the removal of the 10, and this is removing the 10 commandments from the school. The removal of the 10 began with the attack of the 6. And what is this attack of the 6? It's the 6 days of creation. See, they're saying the Bible is wrong. When you say that God created the world in 6 days, they can't accept that. So when they took the Ten Commandments out, it didn't just start with that. It goes all the way back to the beginning. The process of secularization arises not from loss of faith, but from loss of social interest in the world of faith. It begins the moment men feel that religion is irrelevant to the common way of life, and that society as such has nothing to do with the truths of faith. So it's like there's this movement, you can't add faith into your everyday life, into your learning, into your business, into this, into that. And it is like we talked about this morning, getting away from the pattern. When a church starts going in a direction, it keeps going in that direction. And we have moved so far away. And you just think of all of these people that are in power now, holding positions. These 30, 40-year-olds went through a system of education promoting the socialistic, materialistic secularization of all of these beliefs. And then we wonder, why don't people believe in God? They have been brainwashed growing up. It's real subtle, but you see it over and over and over again. So they see it, they hear it in the schools. They come home, they turn on the TV, they say it on TV. They go into stores everywhere, they see it reinforced. 1963, individual prayer and Bible reading in public schools was banned. Two separate cases were combined for the ruling of banning both individual prayer, reading Bible in public schools. Some of this has changed. But again, you know, they are trying to remove God. They're trying to remove God from the home, trying to remove him from the school, trying to remove him from the government. And friends, then we wonder, why don't people believe in God? Liberal logic 101. We see a representation of Christ on the left. This man must be completely removed from our schools. We can't have anybody teaching religion in schools. We can't have that. But the person on the right, this man is perfectly fine. And then we wonder why children don't believe in God, why they show no interest. And people here have told me they have relatives that don't believe in God. This is part of the reason. And again, some of them are in that age group, 30, 40 years old. So you have the education, you have social engineering that comes in, bringing about the change of society. It's done in different ways, psychological manipulation. Again, these subtle little messages and images repeated over and over. And then something that we wouldn't think of at all years ago now becomes accepted, and you aren't allowed to speak out against it. So we have reasons, excuses, people do not believe in God, a bias against God, parents and their upbringing, the educational system, and pride. In John 5:44, when the Lord asked, "How can you believe who received honor from another and do not seek the honor that comes from only God?" So he summed up one of the main reasons why many are unprepared to believe in God. Man is so busy seeking and reveling in his own glory that he has neither the time nor inclination to offer the glory to his Maker. We see self-worship is a big religion today. It's pride. Look at what I can do. Look at what I built. Look at what I did. Look at what I'm going to do. I'm going to build the biggest, the best, the greatest. I'm going to do this. Me, 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 me. And we leave God out of the picture. And Wednesday night, when we left off in our class on coping and solving problems biblically, and we were talking about Daniel chapter 4 and Nebuchadnezzar, we'll talk briefly about him Wednesday, but I want to do a lesson on him next Sunday. I'm planning on that. Nebuchadnezzar, one of the greatest men that ever lived, the ruler of the world at that time. And God humbled him. He humbled him because he did not give God glory. It's pride. It's pride. We see it everywhere. We've heard the name Nietzsche. He's the German philosopher that said God is dead. And back in the 60s, 70s, you would see that a lot of times, these signs, these posters. God is dead. And expressed an attitude when he asked a friend, "If there were gods, how could I endure it to be no God?" See, he thought, this philosopher thought, well, I'm a god, but if there are other gods out there, then I can't be a god. In his composition, this other person wrote, "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." And friends, this is a worldly religion that people just eat up. They eat up, they eat up, they eat up. It's the think and grow rich mentality. It's whatever the mind of man can believe it can achieve. You see that in all of these success programs and all of these marketing programs coming in to businesses. If you can imagine it, you can build it, you can do it. I got a question for you. How did that work with the people in the Tower of Babel? Didn't work out too well. See, it's all in God's will. But we are so proud, we are so full of pride, we don't need God. We don't need God. So people don't believe in God. And you hear different groups. It's Pride Week. It's Pride Month for all kinds of different groups. Where's the glory for God? A Harvard evolutionist ended one of his books with these words, "Man is his own master. He can and must decide and manage his own destiny." See, friends, that's the human thinking and reasoning. We can, wherever we want to go, we can go there. We can manage our destiny. Friends, we are nothing. We are nothing. We are like a worm in the sight of God. And we have sinned against God. And we should be thankful that he lets us exist and breathe his air and enjoy this creation. And we should honor him and worship him and give him glory every day. And if we don't want to do that now, if you don't like doing that, you won't have to worry about doing that for time without end, because you won't make it to heaven. See, it's a whole different mindset where we recognize how unworthy we are and how worthy God is, but this human religion says we're our own God. Look at what I did. Look at what I did. Pride. When man says he believes in a supreme being, he at the same time, if he is honest, confesses that God is holy and he himself unholy. that God is independent and can do according to his own will, while man is dependent. All this is humiliating. It takes away any cause for pride. If there is one thing that man has always liked to feel, it is that he is sufficient for all things, that he is going to bring about a better world by his own ingenuity, that he is the greatest and highest and most important phenomenon in the world, and that beyond him there is nothing worth considering. And we see this from low levels on up. You see somebody that's young or middle age, and they're running a lot of enterprises and big shots, and something happens and somebody goes to help them. No thanks, I don't need your help, I can do it. And you see over and over people in life that was, they had this pride. And one that comes to mind, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali. I watched him growing up on the fights on Friday night, and he would say, I am the greatest. And then the last time I remember seeing him videoed was when he had to be helped along, where he could not even walk on his own without help. Friends, we are not the greatest. God is the greatest. But pride keeps people from believing in God. Well, immorality. Some people use immorality as an excuse for not believing in God. The threat of moral excellence. You do what is right. People don't like that. They don't like it when you do what's right. Why? Because they like to do what's wrong. Competency at a moral level is perhaps the most unwelcome kind of competency. Who among us has not endured mocking from people because we refuse to participate in something immoral? Somebody says, here, have this drink. And you say, no thanks, no. You don't drink? Are you some religious freak? They start making fun of you. Think about the teenager who rejects his friend's invitation to drugs, the employee who chooses not to fudge his timesheet, or the college student who chooses not to cheat on the exam. The threat of moral excellence causes some people to not want to admit that there's a God. Those who are willing to participate in immoral acts often react in a hostile fashion to those who are not willing to. You mean you don't want to do this, you don't want to take this, you don't want to be involved in this, and then they react negatively. You consider the case of Jesus Christ when he calmed the storm-tossed sea in Matthew 8, and those around him asked, what manner of man is this, in verse 27? When those sent to spy on him reported to the chief priests and Pharisees who had commissioned them, they admitted, never a man so spake. You know, look, you can just hear the Pharisees saying, who is this Jesus goody two-shoes that thinks he's better than we are? They didn't believe him. They didn't want to accept him. They didn't leave it at that. That went so far that they hated him. They hated him to the point of putting him to death. Moral superiority. The Sermon on the Mount, that's one of the first things that Jesus addresses in the first sermon that we see recorded. When he told the people, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees. Intellectual intimidation, another reason or excuse that people do not believe in God. Hundreds of thousands of scientists can't be wrong, can they? How can that many people be following a flag with no carrier and someone not find out? It goes on all the time. You don't enjoy being labeled dumb, stupid, or ignorant because you hold a belief different to your opponents. Yet it is those very labels that have been applied to those who are willing to defend the existence of God or the concept of creation. Let's look at that first paragraph again. Hundreds of thousands of scientists can't be wrong, can they? How can that many people be following a flag with no carrier and someone not find out? It goes on all the time. So when anyone spoke out about what was going on a couple years ago, they were shut down. We don't want to hear you. Look at all of these people. All of these people are saying the same thing. You're wrong. You're wrong. They take that a step further, this intellectual intimidation, by other ways, having more things to, back to that social engineering and psychological manipulation, to intimidate you more with what they believe. There are a lot of books written on this and God, and it's like the world's upside down when you start thinking about some of this. Intellectual intimidation. Several years ago, the famous atheist evolutionist of Oxford University, Richard Dawkins, wrote, "It's absolutely safe to say that if you meet somebody who claims not to believe in evolution, that person is ignorant, stupid, or insane." So you can throw in, besides intellectual intimidation, he didn't believe in God because of pride. He was one of these elite people, an atheist and an evolutionist at Oxford University. So you know, if he went there, he's got to know what he's talking about, right? No, he doesn't have to know what he's talking about. You know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Words do hurt us, and no one enjoys the thought of being called ignorant or stupid if we say we believe in God. You believe in God, you're just ignorant. That's stupid. Friend, truth is not determined by popular opinion or majority vote. Many people telling a lie does not make it the truth. Another reason or excuse that people use for not believing in God: evil, pain, and suffering. The world is full of evil, pain, and suffering. If there was a God, if God exists, why does he allow all of this to happen? Why does he allow it to happen? Well, admittedly, some people have difficulty believing in God because of what they consider to be real intellectual obstacles, such as creation out of nothing, a virgin birth, the body resurrection of Christ. And some people think if they believe in Christ and these things, something out of nothing and the virgin birth and the resurrection of Christ, that's just the same as believing in the tooth fairy or Santa Claus. Some people will argue that, and they'll use the evil and pain as a reason. They just don't want to accept God's existence. Other people, however, face no such intellectual obstacles. Instead, they simply do not want to have to deal with the issue of the ultimate existence of God. So they'll say, you know, they just use this excuse: well, there's so much evil and pain and suffering, there can't be a God. And that is like a hip pocket excuse to use, just like, don't bother me. I don't want to hear about this. Sometimes this excuse is a smokescreen like other excuses. People are looking for a reason to excuse themselves from being accountable to God. So let me select a problem. I'll pick suffering. That'll do nicely. Anyway, it will stall anyone who's trying to convert me. It'll stall somebody that's trying to get me to do what the Bible says. Evil, pain, and suffering does exist, but when you start and look at that, there are reasons that exist, and that is not inconsistent with a God of love, who is going to deal with things on his time, and that time isn't right now. That's why he says, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." We don't take vengeance. Someone does us wrong or hurts us, God will take care of that. And the evil that goes on in the world, we can get upset about it, but God's going to take care of that. It's going to bring out a lot of the things that we see happening. It's going to bring out what is in us so we can know who believes in God, who doesn't, who puts their faith and trust in God. Another reason or excuse people use is hypocrisy or misconduct of believers. This is nothing new. Nothing new. Back to Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira. One of the differences is those cases that have always existed have not been publicized in a global fashion like today. Now, again, as I often say, I don't keep up with local televangelists, but these are two that I remember, and I imagine a lot of you here remember them. Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Baker. What happened to Jimmy Swaggart? He was photographed in a midnight meeting with a prostitute. Everybody in the world, well, you mean you're a Christian? Well, look at him. Look at him. Jim Baker was tried in a court of law and found guilty of fraud involving church funds. We're talking this morning about those big churches that have lots of money, and how much would they have if they preached what was in the Bible? But people use the hypocrisy of people believing in God as an excuse to not believe. The corruption, shortcomings, or the hypocrisy in the lives of some believers have been used to justify the rejection of Christianity. They are viewed as adequate samples of faith, and since the samples are not good, the faith is viewed as bad. Okay, so you say this preacher represents the Bible and God. Well, if this is the way he is, I'm not going to follow that. I don't believe in God. Proverbs 25:19. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. The last one we're going to look at, unjust acts committed by believers in the name of God. This is related to the one before. But again, we know of people, and you can have Bible examples of very godly men, but they committed unjust acts. You think about David. You think about David. You think about Uzzah. You think about Peter. You think about Paul. All this does not point out that there is no God. This just points out that we are all human. We are all sinners, and none of us are better than anyone else. And we'll use Paul as an example of how he lusted after Bathsheba and committed adultery and had her husband killed and did other things. And we'll talk about Uzzah and how he reached out to study the cart with the ark on it. And he was probably a really sincere person, but he did what was wrong, and he's held up as an example of not following what God says to do 100%. We'll talk about Peter. You know, I'll never deny you, Lord. I'll never deny you. And he denies him three times. All the other times, Peter's faith failed. We usually don't talk about Paul too often because, you know, Paul, he was a good apostle. But all of these are men. All of these struggled with things. And that does not mean because they struggled with things that there is no God. That means many times that would reinforce their desire to serve God stronger, to draw closer to God, because they did not want to be in a relationship away from God. Paul, he waged his own personal war against the temptations to do evil rather than good. When he wrote to encourage the first century Christians in Rome, he admitted in Romans chapter 7, "For the good that I will do, I do not do, but the evil I will not do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin dwells in me. I find then a law that evil is present within me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law which is in my members. You see, we all have this battle. We all have this battle because we live in this world. We live in this world of sin. And that's why we're told to be soldiers. We are soldiers, soldiers of Christ. That's why Paul told Timothy, fight the good warfare. That's why Paul told the Ephesians, put on the armor of God. We are in a battle. It's not against this person or that person. It's against the forces of evil. Throughout the Bible, heaven's warning was that belief accompanied by faithfulness would bring spiritual life and God's blessings. That's believing in God. While unbelief, you don't believe in God, and it's accompanying unfaithfulness would bring God's wrath and spiritual death. So when I was talking about preaching this lesson this morning, and Dale, somebody, well, I said his name, said that you preached one not too long ago on reasons to believe. And I said, yeah, seven reasons to believe in God. Here's seven reasons that people use, seven excuses. Nine excuses people use to not believe. Biased against God, parents and upbringing, education, pride, immorality, intellectual intimidation, evil, pain and suffering, hypocrisy or misconduct of believers, unjust acts committed by believers in the name of God. And you know what? You can pick any one of these excuses, you can put all of them together, and it's not going to stand on the day of judgment. None of these are valid excuses. We looked at in class this morning, Romans chapter 1, verse 18, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven. This God of love, this God of infinite love, also infinite justice, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. All of those men that I spoke about and had slides and quotations from, those are men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And Peter warns us also, if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for the judgment, if God didn't spare the angels, and if God did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah and eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing the world on the flood on the world of the ungodly, if God did not spare the angels, God did not spare all those people outside of the ark, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. If God didn't spare the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the examples can go on and on and on, if God didn't spare them, why do we think that God will spare us? Why do we think that? The world uses all kinds of excuses to get us to turn away from God. We have a choice. God is not going to force us to believe in Him, but we're told that he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. God has given us an abundance of evidence. And as I said, I want to go through and do several lessons on these to help us establish a good understanding of belief, why we should believe in God, why it makes more sense to believe in God than not to believe in God, how to build our faith, how to sustain our faith when times get bad, and how to defend our faith. Friends, if there's anyone here this evening that needs to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.